So I waited. I watched the woman who had been praying so devoutly leave the church, accompanied by the friendly spirit. I tried as hard as I could to pray but kept being distracted by my fears. What would happen to me? Who would come to attend to me? Perhaps I was going to be taken away? At that moment I did not even dare to look around, so frightened was I and so plagued by my bad conscience. But I did not have to wait long before I felt a hand on my shoulders, and when I turned round I saw a spirit looking just as kind as the previous one. He said to me, "Brother, I will accompany you if you would like me to do so." "Oh, yes please," I answered with relief. Reassuringly the spirit put his hand on my arm. I felt very happy, even though I did not know where we were going, for I felt certain that I no longer needed to be afraid. I began to ask questions. "May I know where you come from? I don't have a real home myself, and I have only been here a little while. I have no idea where to settle down." Then the spirit said, "Poor brother, do you really long for a beautiful home?" "Yes," I answered, "I really do, but to tell you the truth, I do have some kind of a home, not here on earth though. It's only a very modest hut by the edge of a wood, but I don't like it there." The spirit replied, "If that is where you are supposed to live, then you should live there. I can bet you into a secret, you will not have to live there forever. But it will be best for you to return there and to try to pray as you have been doing here." I said that I was not brave enough to do this. I was afraid that however hard I tried, I would not be able to bear the monotony and lack of diversion all by myself. The radiant spirit consoled me, saying, "It will only be like that for the time being. But now you wish to visit another church." Hardly had he finished speaking than we were on our way, at such an easy pace that we had soon left that town behind and were arriving at another one. Here we went into a beautiful church where we again heard wonderful music. I saw people praying and, as before, I noticed that some were accompanied by stern-looking angels and others by kindly ones. I asked my spirit companion, "Why do some people have a kind angel with them and others a severe one?" The spirit explained, "It depends on people's attitude and the state of their spiritual progress. Some need the strict guidance of a strong divine spirit in order to make any progress." My companion drew my attention to something else. "Look at all the tempters who have been able to insinuate themselves into this place. See how they encourage the worshippers to think worldly thoughts, and how they try to distract them from their prayers and put unworthy thoughts into their minds. Now look at the stern angels. The tempter spirits do not dare to go near them. All human beings are granted the opportunity to turn their thoughts in the right direction and to pray. If they are willing to pray, they are supported by the divine world. The spirits who give this loving support are themselves sufficiently strong not to be affected by the tempters. They have great inner strength and they bring people joy and beauty from their own world. They radiate only love." I could not but agree, and I suddenly felt overjoyed to be with such a loving heavenly spirit. It was wonderful to be seen with him. However, he soon said, "Dear brother, I have been glad to show you the way here, for that was your wish, but I cannot stay with you. I must now leave you and you must find your way by yourself. Just one more thing," I begged him, "please come back with me to the hut. I might not be able to find the way without you." "Oh, you can see the way there quite easily," he said. "But since you have asked me, I will accompany you. Though you must promise now to give up all thought of worldly pleasures and turn your thoughts towards spiritual tasks. As you know, your life has not been in very good order and you have much to make up for." Anxiously I asked a question, "Should one fear judgment as my mother said?" "Well, I can't say how it will be for you," the spirit answered, smiling at me. I knew, however, that the reason for his reticence was that he did not want to worry me. Meanwhile we had arrived at the hut. I did not like it, though I knew I would be making contact once again with the inhabitants of other huts in the area. I immediately felt an urge to return to Earth. I wanted to try to go there, and I was sure I was not going to be able to stand life in these bleak surroundings. My companion immediately read my thoughts and said, "You must not think along those lines. I promise I shall look in on you again. I shall visit you and tell you which church offers music and singing, how big the congregation is and how devout are the worshippers. I shall tell you all you need to know. I realized that I would have to be obedient and consoled myself with the thought, degrees the others will see what an important visitor I have I said goodbye to the angel and found myself alone in my wretched hut. I tried to pray but found it hard, for I missed the beautiful music and the devout people who had inspired me to pray with them in the church. I felt that my solitary prayer would neither be heard nor seen, but I persisted and tried to pray as best as I could. My spirit friend came once more, and though he only stayed with me for a short while he comforted me, saying, "You must not return to human society. It is no longer the right world for you. You have had to leave it because your work now lies here." I gave him my promise and, in return he promised to continue to bring me news particularly concerning any splendid musical performances. I had been very fond of music during my earthly life, and the angel sometimes talked to me about the much more sublime music performed in the higher planes in honor of God. One day he said to me, "This is my last visit. I cannot come to you again. I have supported you, comforted you and shown you the way for long enough. From now on other brothers will look after you." He promised to inquire after my progress again one day, and in return I promised to be brave and to think carefully about my life. I felt sure I had pretty well shed my bad habits, that at least was what I thought. Then, one day, some unexpected visitors arrived, the spirits I had seen when I had opened my spiritual eyes for the first time. They greeted me, saying, "Brother, we have come to judge you." I had had plenty of time in the spiritual world, but I was still filled with fear. These spirits were here to judge me. I felt faint and had to hold on to a bench, the only object in the hut. But they simply turned to me, saying, "Stand up, brother, and look us in the face." Then they began to enumerate my faults, omitting not a single one of them. I was forced to acknowledge what a wretched person I had been. When they had recited a long list of my sins, they began to ask me about my good works, whether I had loved others and had exercised self-control, about my Christian principles and so on. I could not give any answers. "The outlook is not particularly good for you," they said, "and yet, as you have seen, we gave you your freedom, and you have used it to the full. However, you have now recognized the need to turn towards God, and you have tried to put your cravings aside. But you still have vices you had not thought of, and which you have not yet overcome. You must free yourself, not only from these vices but from everything else that burdens you. You must become pure and learn to love and have understanding for your brothers and sisters." I was ready to agree with all that they had said, and so I begged them to give me instruction. I was told that I would receive it, but that I would have to atone for everything that I had done wrong in my life. I found myself thinking that it was punishment enough to have to stay in that hut. But they saw what I was thinking and said, "It is true, you should not have returned to the old world again. Instead you should have stayed here and tried to earn the right to a better home. This world offers plenty of opportunities for you to make reparation for your misdeeds. Come with us." I followed them without daring to say a word. But while we were leaving I had a quick glance at their faces and saw that they looked even sterner than the spirits that I had seen behind the people in church. I decided to let things take their course, for I supposed that the present state of affairs would not last forever. I also cherished the hope that the kind angel would now come to my aid. Our way passed through the forest bordering the hut, but instead of becoming lighter it became darker and darker. Then we reached another hut by the roadside, the door of which they opened, saying, "Here you will have the opportunity to reflect on all that we have been telling you. And if you find you have forgotten any of it we can quickly supply you with a written version." They then gave me a verbatim report, in my own language, of everything they had said. Without this, I would surely not have been able to remember it all. I was required to reflect on all my misdeeds, every insulting remark I had made, every hurt I had inflicted on others and every irresponsible action I had taken. How long was this going to last? They did not waste any more words beyond the statement, "When you have recognized the error of your ways, then we shall visit you again." At that they departed. It became quite dark, though I could still manage to read the script they had given me. The letters were luminous, so that I was able to make out each sentence in turn. While reading, I was trying to recollect my previous life in such a way that I was able to ask God to forgive me for each fault as soon as it came into consciousness. At the same time, I acknowledged my frailty, and asked for the opportunity to make reparation for my misdeeds. I realized that the only way I could prove my willingness to make amends was by being ready to take on a particular burden, perhaps one that involved great suffering. Such suffering should not, however, be meaningless; rather, it should serve to increase my spiritual maturity. Those were my thoughts, but how was I to put them into action? I knew all too little about spiritual law, and what I did know was based on what I had seen and experienced as a spirit moving amongst human beings. I told myself firmly, "There is sure to be someone to help me and to tell me what to do. I shall say, I leave it to you. Judge me as you think fit. I accept any punishment that you decide upon, and I shall do everything that you ask." That is what I resolved to do. I have no idea how long I remained in the darkness, for time had lost all meaning for me. But at the very moment when I had impressed this good resolution on my mind, there was a knock on the door, and in came the same radiant spirit who had earlier shown me the way and had led me back to the hut. He had come to find out how I was. I told him about my troubles and asked, "How much longer will I have to stay here? Look at this report." The spirit took the piece of paper, folded it, put it aside and said, "Let's not talk about it now, for I know they are already on the way here to free you. All I wanted to tell you is not to be afraid, this will not last much longer." The spirit soon had to go away again, leaving me full of excitement and wondering what was going to happen next. Then the other spirits actually did arrive. They walked in without knocking, and I could see that they no longer looked so stern. They shook hands with me, saying, "Now that you have made your resolution, everything depends on whether you are able to carry it out." They took me back by the same route through the dark forest until we arrived at the original hut. They opened the door and asked me to lock inside. "Don't be afraid, someone else is already living in the hut." I saw that this was indeed the case. We turned away from the hut and found ourselves on a path rising towards a hill. The going was so easy that it felt as though we were flying. We reached a village where there were lots of houses. And when we met the people who lived there, they all seemed very busy and cheerful. They smiled at us as if we were old friends, though at first I could not see anyone I knew amongst them. In no time at all, however, I saw my mother coming up to me as well as other people I knew. But mother greeted me with great joy. The others were also glad, saying, "Now you have passed the test and it's all over. We are so glad. We have been praying for you." I sighed with relief, but my companions were already thinking about the future. "You will have to go to school in this village and learn about divine law and the will of God. You will also learn something about God's creation. But that is secondary. The main requirement will be that you carry out a certain task. You have been comforted by an angel, and now you in turn will bring comfort to an unhappy spirit in the realm of darkness, while at the same time undergoing instruction. Alternatively, you might bring consolation to an exiled spirit. Are you willing to take this on?" I told them that I was indeed willing to do what they asked, for I valued their support. I was now going to learn why it was that so many spirits were unable to follow my path of purification, but instead were banished after their physical death to the material world, or condemned to live in darkness. It would be my job to visit these unfortunate beings and bring them the same kind of comfort as I myself had once received. The idea pleased me, and since that time I have continued with this work. Indeed, I am still doing so today. Even now I am an eager pupil, and I am glad that I have learned to be more self-controlled. I am also glad that my work, which has demanded courage, is a source of joy to me. It is good to be able to raise my eyes and my hands to heaven to praise God, even though I am still so remote from Him. I shall always be grateful to have been led in this direction, for I know very well that others have had to follow a far harder road than mine. Well, dear brothers and sisters, I have told you about some of my experiences after my physical death. Many people feel themselves to be so far away from God that they cannot believe they will ever be held responsible for their lives. For a long time, I felt as they do. Now I must go back to my task of bringing comfort to unhappy souls. After that I shall again be attending various places of instruction in my work. May God give you the power to think and to act in an honorable fashion so that you do not succumb to the temptations of this world. In the next world it is difficult to shed the appetites that hinder your spiritual progress. May you now return to your homes with God's blessing and power to support you. God bless. Address by the Ascending Spirit Max Metten, received on 7 February 1962 in German through Beatrice Brunner. David, once lord of the manor, then a life as a shepherd to restore balance. Personal report, 5 July 1961. God bless. Dear brothers and sisters, I was asked to tell you something about my memories. I know that ascending spirits are asked to speak here from time to time about their early experiences, certain aspects of their preceding life. Much time has passed since my last life on Earth. In the interval between then, and talking to you now, much of my thinking, too, has of course changed. I have also regained a sense of inner balance, and this I owe to the experiences of my most recent lifetime on Earth. I was asked to speak very specifically about things which are thought to be of importance to you. Don't think we would be allowed to tell you just anything. No, before we stand before you we have already discussed with our spiritual guides what we will be speaking to you about. Our guides are there beside us, and if we should mention something which is out of order or inappropriate for you to hear, on which involves improper language, they will raise their hand immediately to stop us from speaking further. Nothing like this will happen during this hour. Such a thing is no longer possible since we have now reached a level of spiritual development where it is clear to us what makes sense to say to people and what, indeed, one must tell them. Now I would like to tell you something about my previous lifetime, and explain also why it was I had to live a life of that kind. I was a shepherd. Mother Earth was my home, my place of rest and my best friend. I was barely 50 when I had to leave your world. When I came over, I was told I had died of a lung inflammation. Now, here is the story of my life on Earth. My father and my grandfather had both been shepherds. And so it was that I, too, became a shepherd. There was no other choice for me. Schooling was never a possibility. I could write my name, however, that they had taught me. My name is David, or rather, my name was David. That single word I was able to write. But I could read nothing else, that was the extent of my learning. Without schooling, that's all one can do. I had a large flock of sheep to look after. In the course of my life I had a number of good and loyal friends, my dogs. And I had one more friend besides, my flute. How was one to pass the time, if not playing the flute? I spent my nights on the ground, covered with a big coat, if one can call it that. It was only a rough sort of cloak, put together out of various bits of cloth or sacking. One of my dogs, whom I still remember well, was particularly attached to me. They all proved to be loyal to me, my dogs. Whenever I spent the night with my flock, this particular dog used to crawl under my cloak. He'd always stay alert and react to the slightest sound. Sometimes I would wake up during the night when he crawled out to see that things were all right. I would always be awakened by one or another of my faithful friends when a storm, for example, was on its way, or whenever something was not as it should be. I must tell you, too, I had a house of sorts, but one rarely used. It was really just a derelict hut, but I used to keep all my belongings there, a pair of worn-out shoes, a knapsack, and the like. I seldom went there. I was not the only shepherd. There were quite a few others, further afield. We used to answer one another on our flutes. Also, we couldn't spend the whole time, or the whole year, in one and the same spot. We used to walk very long distances, and so, I lived my life in nature, with my animals. I asked nothing from life. The animals belonged to a wealthy castle owner, so, from time to time, I used to meet up with the heads of the estate. They would come and see us shepherds to get an exact tally of the animals and for various bits of information we were able to give them. They also used to bring us food. Yes, indeed, that was often the only chance we got for a bit of conversation. We used to ask after certain people, and talk about how life was in the towns, or the villages, or in a castle. But as far longing to live in a house, I really didn't. I wasn't bothered about the bad weather. I loved nature, she was my home. And so, now and again, we would hear about the fine castes in the region, and about the people whose lives were a lot more comfortable than our own, living in their fine houses and having a nice quiet place to sleep at night, with a proper bed, and so on. I couldn't remember ever having had a real bed to sleep on, even as a child. As a shepherd, my father was just as poor as I. But we didn't know life any other way, and we were happy enough with what we had. One time slept on the ground, got soaked through, and caught such a heavy cold that I died. When I arrived in the spiritual world, everything seemed very strange. Crowds of spirit beings stood there before me, beings I had never met before. My father, my mother, my grandfather and my grandmother came over to me and embraced me, and were evidently very pleased to see me. They kept saying, "David, you've come back?" They were very happy that I was now in this other world. At first I found myself feeling very unsettled, for I had no idea that life would continue. I believed in God, but that was really all. Now and again, I had prayed, but I did not have a special relationship with God. I was also rather cut off from people. I hadn't had much to do with them, and therefore never found myself disturbed or annoyed in any way. I was simply left to myself, and I must say I was happy enough with my lot. With the sheep and the dogs was happy, too, whenever I heard the sound of a flute, and especially happy that I could play the flute myself. Now all these spirit beings had gathered round me and were telling me, yes, that life is over and balance has been achieved. I didn't know what to make of these words. I still felt numb. I was able, however, to appreciate how much more beautiful the surroundings were here than where I had lived before. You won't ever have to sleep on wet ground again. You will have a much nicer life from now on, they told me. In truth, I felt no need for things to be nicer or better than they had been before. I had been entirely content with what life had given me during my time on Earth, and now here I was being told that I was to have a nicer life, better even than before. What did I need with a nicer life? So, I was told I was now in the world of spirit, where God has supreme command with all his throngs of angels. I was to obey the angels, but first they would grant me a lengthy period of freedom. I liked this word freedom, for there was one thing I felt very sure about: I was not going to remain in this new world. However much more pleasant it seemed, I didn't like it. Everything felt strange. I did not enjoy having all these spirit beings milling around me. I wanted to be on my own. I didn't want things to be so much nicer. And since they had been saying to me that I was to be left to do as I liked, I immediately made it my business to return to Earth, to the place where I used to live. And so I went out once more over the huge, wide fields in search of my flocks of sheep. Even though I immediately realized that they could neither see nor feel my presence there, that in effect there was nothing more I could do in this old world, I still felt a great pull towards it, and thought it a thousand times more beautiful than before. The ground no longer felt damned poor cold, and I was no longer affected by the freezing cold or the heat I had once found so oppressive. Nothing of this sort bothered me anymore. Instead, I found it pleasantly cool, and the atmosphere felt just right. So, in this way I wandered around, without growing at all weary. I had no shoes, but then I had never, or at least only very rarely, worn shoes during my previous life there. It felt as if I had been given a new body. Everything was so light, even my breathing. I had no discomfort of any kind, no feelings of being weighed down by anything. I wandered through this world again from field to field, and from one region to the other. I gazed with amazement and delight at everything I saw. Now and again I stopped, wherever fancy looked me, being careful to avoid contact with any other beings. I wanted to be alone. Many beings came up to me and invited me to join them, but I did not respond. How long I wandered round like this, I do not know. I think it must have been for some decades. And so I continued my wanderings until the small group of spirit beings who had greeted me on my arrival in the spiritual world came up to me and said, "David, will you not join us? What is it you are looking for here on Earth? What can the Earth, its people, and all that lives there, offer you now? Come with us. You have new tasks to attend to. You should leave this world now, really leave it, once and for all. God already indicated as much when you left your earthly body. That was the proper time for you to take your leave, but you came back. You must now consider this as more than enough." I asked whether it was really necessary to return to the higher planes. I told them how beautiful I found life on the earth, so pleasant, so free from all burdens. They replied that in the other world, the real world, life would be much more pleasant still. And while they were entreating me to come back with them, they succeeded in leading me away from the earth, back to the new world where I was now meant to stay. "Can I walk about here, too?" I asked. "Can I have animals to look after, as well?" "You can go for walks if you like," they answered. "We have animals of all kinds here. But you must look upon this previous work of yours as finished. You must strive now towards something higher. You have been a shepherd, and now it's time for you to turn to something new. You ought now to apply yourself to work of a new kind, for you are not meant to stay a shepherd forever." I listened to these words, but they made little impression on me, for I was perfectly happy with things as they were. I had never had any particular responsibilities and had been able to live as I pleased. However, things were not to continue like that. I was to be given responsibility and begin to work. These guides who had assembled round me were very considerate, and, I have to say, very loving towards me. "David," they said to me, "we have something we want to tell you. When we have explained certain matters to you, you will be more inclined to fulfill your new duties, and you will find it easier to adjust to your new life." I wanted to hear what my guides had to tell me. They recounted to me details of the life I had led previous to my life as a shepherd. There was nothing of note to recall about that life as it was one of modesty and poverty. It was the life before that which was the complete opposite of poverty, and this they wanted me to picture with the utmost clarity. Incredibly, I was able to see myself exactly as I had lived, living where I had lived, and behaving as I had behaved. I saw myself in a fine castle. I saw great wealth all around me, and I saw myself living in lordly comfort. I saw the perpetual need in me to have more and more possessions, the urge to have more and more I could call my own. And I should say that this did not always lead me to behave in an honorable way. I used violence to get what I wanted. I had believed in God, and now and then had even done a good deed. But neither these good deeds of mine nor my belief in God seemed now to be of any significance, and my attention was instead drawn to the other side of things, my life of indulgence and luxury, my urge to constantly possess more. I saw how the time came for me to leave the world and everything in it. I experienced myself in the last days of my life, caught up in a passionate rage, longing to hold on to my possessions and refusing mentally to give them up and be parted from them. It was for this reason that a way was created for me to bring balance back into my life. I was astonished and found it difficult to believe. "David the shepherd, once lord of a castle. Unbelievable," I said. "And what is more, all this earthly wealth now meant nothing to me, absolutely nothing. I had no desire for any splendors or wealth whatsoever. I loved nature, and I loved animals. but I had no desire to sleep in a house, let alone have a house I could call my own. We chose this marvelous way for you to follow, they told me.